Welcome to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by the Academic Health Science Network for the North East and North Cumbria, which supports innovation in all its forms within the NHS and social care. In this podcast, we will showcase some of the amazing work and programmes that we lead on to transform healthcare through innovation. And if you'd like to find out more about how the AHSN supports healthcare through innovation, you can visit our website at www.ahsn-nenc.org.uk. In this episode, the AHSN's Patient Safety Collaborative Programme Lead, Tony Roberts, talks to the team behind the Pulse Oximetry at Home programme for the Tees Valley CCG, one of three national pilot sites for the NHS, mobilised for rapid adoption of an innovative programme at the height of the COVID pandemic in 2020.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Tony Roberts. I'm the Patient Safety Lead with the Academic Health Science Network in the North East and North Cumbria, and I also work at South Tees Hospital and have had a long association with the Tees Valley. So it's a great pleasure to be able to talk to my colleagues about a brilliant piece of work that's been going on here since the beginning of the pandemic, and COVID affected us so greatly. And the team here responded and set up both Pulse Oximetry at Home, as we now call it, and COVID Oximetry at Home, and a COVID virtual ward running out of the hospital, and did it with lots of collaboration between the teams. So what I'll do is ask Fiona to say hello and tell you who she is, and then I'll turn to Simon.
So I'm Fiona Adamson. I'm the Chief Exec of Hartlepool and Stockton Health, and we're a GP federation. We're one of three GP federations involved in the Oximetry at Home service, which covers the whole of the Tees Valley, working together. My colleagues, Elm, and also PhD in Middlesbrough, Redcar and Darlington. We are membership organisations. We are owned by all the practices across the Tees Valley, which meant that we could work on Oximetry at Home as a partner of every practice that was set up in Tees Valley. And we were particularly interested to get involved in the Oximetry at Home service because we'd done a lot of work looking after COVID positive patients and COVID symptomatic patients. And this seemed like a really simple next step for helping people to stay safely at home, who needed to be at home, and helping people to get quickly into hospital who actually needed to be in hospital at the right time, all using a tiny bit of kit that we soon found that everyone could use and could use really easily.
I'm going to bring in my colleague from the CCG, Dr. Janet Walker. Perhaps you'd like to say who you are.
Hi, thanks, Tony. My name is Dr. Janet Walker, and I'm a GP in Middlesbrough, and I'm Medical Director of Tees Valley CCG.
Thanks, Janet. We also have with us Dr. Sathi Murthy, who's a respiratory consultant. Sathi, would you like to say who you are?
Hello there. So I'm Sathi Murthy. I'm a consultant in respiratory medicine. I'm the clinical director of respiratory medicine at James Cook Hospital in South Tees NHS Trust.
Thanks. And also respiratory lead for the network?
Oh, yes. How can I forget that? So I am the secondary respiratory lead for the respiratory clinical network for the North East and North Cumbria.
Thanks, Sathi. It's brilliant. I'm going to bring Simon in and then we'll go back in.
My name's Simon Stockley. I'm a GP in Stockton, and I'm the medical director of Hartlepool and Stockton Health Limited. I've been involved in looking at deteriorating patients for a long time, and was very conscious of work with patients who became sick with COVID, who became very hypoxic, with low levels of oxygen, and were not perceiving themselves as being ill or needing to go into hospital. And that was where things started. The idea of silent hypoxia amongst a group of patients who could be helped to identify that they were getting sick early and to get to hospital where interventions such as oxygen and latterly drug treatments could be offered early in the course of their disease and create better outcomes. And through my links, we were able to put ourselves forward as a pilot project and to bring in all the elements of healthcare in the Tees Valley, together with our colleagues in the local authorities, to produce something that was covering the whole of the Tees Valley and was accessible to all. And that was the goal that we set out with back in June of last year.
So as most people know, the North East had quite a heavy load of COVID through the pandemic and quite a tough first wave. And then that helped stimulate getting oximetry at home off and running in preparation for what also turned out to be quite a tough second wave in the autumn and winter. So perhaps we can go backwards and think about what it was like deciding to set up in the first place. And I think I'm going to come to Janet first and then to Sathi, because you were both involved in thinking about why we should set up a ward and what we thought the benefits might be. So Janet.
Thank you, Tony. You're right, thinking back to last year, sitting in the Tees Valley, yes, we were surrounded by high rates of infection, high mortality rate. The evidence was emerging that, yes, there was a definite link to deprivation, which obviously from a Tees Valley perspective, we have some significant portions of very high deprivation. And it was, you know, from a primary care clinician point of view, just looking at what could you do differently to support your patient population? What could you do that helps to improve the outcomes and, you know, make sure that you reduce your mortality rates? And it was emerging about the silent hypoxia. And so COVID oximetry felt like a bit of a no-brainer. It seemed the right thing to do. It felt the right thing to do. And that started to trigger conversations and obviously discussing with Simon, with experience around the deteriorating patient and his work with the ICGP, very much got us thinking, well, look, we have opportunities in the Tees Valley to do something that helped to improve our patients' outcomes and turn the tide on our very high rates of mortality and incidence of people with disease who are deteriorating, when we could have done something differently to prevent it. It was a ripe opportunity. The Tees Valley CCG had only just come into fruition, with three CCGs having merged together from the April. There was an opportunity to get the three federations to work as an alliance as to how we could cover across our 80 practices. It was an opportunity again to work with our provider trusts across the Tees Valley geography to have a greater coverage across a bigger patch to see what could we do to turn that tide, Tony.
Thanks, Janet. And Sathi, from your point of view, how did it feel in the hospital? Why did you think that a virtual ward would be helpful?
The first wave was quite difficult for our hospital. Our hospital was divided into two zones, and a lot of non-respiratory physicians started looking after COVID patients, and as well as surgical specialty consultants were looking after patients. And we found it very difficult because we were concerned that we were not giving the optimum care that we would need to deliver to patients. Ideally, we would have lots of respiratory consultants looking after these COVID patients. And because of the significant amount of admissions to the hospital, we were not able to look after every patient. And so that kind of triggered the thought process, what we could do differently, where we could monitor these patients more safely, as well as talking to Janet and Simon. This idea of the Tees Valley oximetry came up. So we thought we could use this for our hospital patients who presents through the door, through the ED department. Since we cover North Yorkshire patients as well, we would need to cover those patients as well. And we felt that this would be useful for discharging people home earlier and monitor them to make sure that they recover completely in their own kind of a home environment, which is better for them. And at the same time, we would be able to deliver safe care at home as well. So that was the thought process. And that triggered the conversation. And I was very happy to work with Janet and Simon and the whole T-SPA League, which was exciting at the time. So it gave some kind of a purpose to us that we are doing something for our patients within the less resources that we had at the time.
That's great. And I think one of the key advantages of why Tees Valley managed to become one of the three national pilot sites was partly because of Simon's knowledge of this topic of deterioration and his role at the RCGP and the links that that created. And through the ASN, we also had good links into the National Clinical Director for Deterioration, a chap called Matanada Kim, who was very supportive of this whole approach and led it nationally. And so we could learn from other places. It was a national learning network that we joined and made contributions to. And then we also had a very strong setup locally through the three GP federations, as Fiona described, that allowed us to mobilise quickly to set a service in place that would actually deliver this care in a kind of effective and enabled way, so a digitally enabled way. And that perhaps, Fiona, you'd like to say something about the digital side of it, because that really helped, I think, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So we set up using an app, and the app was something developed by MyMHealth. And the app was really simple, had two benefits. One, it enabled patients to record their readings somewhere, and it would give them immediate feedback on what they needed to do. So if you're green, you're fine. Keep doing what we've advised you to do. If you're amber, it's a good idea to get in touch with the nurse who's available to talk to you on the oximetry at home service. And then if you're red, you really need to get an ambulance. And again, that's where the teamwork comes in. So our nurses will follow up with those amber and red patients to make sure that they are following the advice that we've given them. We also had great links with our Northeast Ambulance Service colleagues, who knew if they received a call from a patient on the oximetry at home service, exactly what the pathway was and how quickly they needed to respond. Our colleagues in secondary care knew if they got someone coming in from oximetry at home, where they wanted them to go, what readings they'd already had. So we were able to work together to create some quite slick pathways based on the readings and the technology. Patients found it easy to use. They found it easy to chat to the nurse. And I think the one thing that really stands out for me about patient feedback is the reassurance that people mention. So we have a lot of unsolicited feedback. We were inundated with cards and all sorts of things. And patients say that they felt reassured. And I think that works in two ways. Firstly, for those nervous patients who might actually have gone into ED quite regularly because they were really worried, they knew that there was a reading and there was a nurse at the end of the phone who was telling them, no, you're okay to be at home, and that's fine. And then those patients who actually fall into the other category, so they are the I don't want to bother anyone patient. Those patients knew that actually their reading was telling them they needed to do something quickly, and the nurse at the end of the phone was telling them, you're not bothering anyone, you really need some more care. And people felt reassured either way, either to go into hospital or to stay at home, and that was the right thing to do. And that came across quite strongly. And I think that reassurance actually comes across with the clinical colleagues as well, because they were basing their care on something that the patient was telling them, and we could actually see it reflected using the technology. We could see on our dashboard remotely, actually, yes, this patient has input this reading and this is what it means. So it was quite a new way of doing things for us, not just the technology, but also the fact that this was remote and it was also nurse-led. So we have a fantastic team of nurses 7 days a week who really felt very passionately about this. To the point where one of them really strongly believes that if this had been available earlier in the year, that lives would have been saved. And she's convinced that people that she'd known from her practice would have benefited from this the second the pandemic began, really.
I think the other thing I would say about having an app was that we set out from the beginning to cover a large number of people. that the Tees Valley has over 700,000 people living in it, and we wanted as many of them to be covered by this service as we could. And the app allows us to scale up and scale down without needing huge numbers of staff calling and contacting patients. And patients can submit their apps, their readings to the app when it's convenient to them. I think one of the notable things about the project was the way that we had three federations, three acute trusts, and a newly created CCG all brought together, working together with a shared goal and with strong governance in the project from the start. We were able to bring in support from our ambulance service because we could describe a model that applied across a significant geography, and we could engage with local authorities because they knew all of their population was involved. It wasn't one small practice or one small group of the population that was covered. So this was real population health management put together at speed during a lull in the crisis that prepared us for the second wave when it came. And we think it's probably been extremely useful in that. And we've been part of the national research looking into the effectiveness of such virtual oximetry monitoring.
I wanted to just to touch on Simon's point about broadening the team out to include five local authorities and five public health directors, who were all really interested in what this could do for the local population during the pandemic. So we found that we were pushing at an open door in terms of working with some of the local test and trace teams, as well as NHS Digital nationally, to get access to the data and to make those text messages and to make those phone calls to people who fall into the high risk groups. And we had a very good success rate generally with people who fell into those groups and who got the text message. So for every 10 people that we spoke to, then roughly six of them would decide, yeah, we'll come onto the ward. And we actually had instances where patients would refer their own family members and ask if they could also be admitted onto the oximetry at home service. One other thing I wanted to mention was we've talked quite a bit about technology and an app and a dashboard and text messages, but actually that's not to say that those people who don't have a smartphone or those people where perhaps English isn't their first language, that's not to say that they were excluded, because what we did was we created a paper version, instructions on paper for using the oximeter itself, and then those patients would simply ring the nursing team and the nurses would input the readings for them. So, and our safety net, if you like, was that the nurses would know that every day they needed to get readings twice from every patient on the service. And for those people who hadn't submitted their first or their second reading, then there would be a process of proactive calling to make sure that they were safe and they'd just forgotten, or if something had happened to them, that we could quickly get them some assistance. And that worked really well.
I think that the next thing really is how this helped with the inequalities agenda.
You're right, Tony. One of the things that triggered us wanting to get involved in the first place was our awareness of the link with deprivation and with our high levels of deprivation in the Tees Valley. It's something that we were very focused on and knew that initially when we were having some outbreaks that were detected in the initial outbreak management approaches, that it gave us a chance to get into those communities. And we were linked in with the test and trace program so that we could make sure that when patients were identified as positive, that the test and trace workers locally were able to inform the patients about the ability to be monitored in the COVID oximetry at home approach, to hopefully then make sure that we could reduce, you know, the high levels of mortality in those communities where we were having the outbreaks, where there was significant concern about, you know, the impact of the deprivation.
I just want to ask about your feeling about how this affected different ethnic communities in the populations that we serve. Do you think it had advantages there, Janet?
We were very mindful across the Tees Valley. We have, you know, some great diversity in our, amongst our communities, and we wanted to make sure that because of the higher incidence of COVID disproportionately in BAME communities, that we did make sure that our oximetry at home was available and accessible to communities that maybe didn't have English as a first language. We had the materials translated so that we could try and make it as universally accessible across all of our communities to make sure that we didn't have that disproportionate mortality rate within any of our particular populations or cohorts, and including easy read materials as well that we would utilise for our LD community, recognising the link with, you know, with the high mortality in that cohort, in addition to try and make sure that we did cover off all of those populations that initially had been identified as at a high risk of COVID. Obviously, as time's gone on, we learnt more about who was at greatest risk and how we tried to flex to make sure we'd covered off those patients that we really need to get through onto our ward. And we used this information when we were redeveloping the criteria to make sure as time went on that we were capturing those right patients that you could get the greatest benefit from monitoring at home.
That's great. So could you tell us a little bit about how many patients have benefited from the two services? So I'll ask Janet first about oximetry at home. It's been quite a large service, hasn't it?
Yes, you're right, Tony. Certainly over the time we've been operating since July, we've had over 1,000 patients that have now been referred and followed through the service. It has been no small undertaking, but obviously the size of the population, we cover 700,000 patients in the area of question. So it is good that we've had that many patients through, but it's how we can continue to get further patients who are, you know, who are diagnosed from now and into the future going forward monitors as well.
Thanks. And for the virtual ward coming from the hospital, Sathi, how many have we seen roughly through that service?
We've seen 542 patients at my last kind of account. We still have patients currently being monitored through our service, but the numbers are fortunately quite low at the present moment. But we have helped 542 patients to be looked after at home sooner than we would have done so normally.
Yeah, so 1,500, that's got to be one of the largest services that has come into existence across the country, I think, between the two. I think people listening to this might find it helpful to understand a little bit about the staffing model that we've used. So again, I think if I start with the CCG model first, can you tell us a little bit about how we staffed them and how we were able to release those people?
It was a great opportunity for us to look how we could do things differently across the Tees Valley and, you know, get the best coverage we could across our 80 practice area. And the federations across the Tees Valley used this as an opportunity to come together as an alliance to actually work together collaboratively to make sure that we had that coverage during the monitoring period 7 days a week.
This was staffing shared across two of the federations and was a mixture of largely band 5 nurses, usually one a day during daylight hours, providing care, and the staff who provided out of hours care at the weekend, their nursing team took over and supported them. They were supported with admin people who could make contact and get the readings back off patient and help with onboarding and the practical aspects of getting oximeters to people who weren't very well and were having to isolate. That was dealt with by admin people, and the nurses did a splendid job of doing what nurses do, which is assessing patients, assessing their physical and their mental health needs to be able to cope with what often was perceived as, and actually on occasions became, a life-threatening infection.
Thanks, Simon. So the same question to Sathi, how did we do it in the virtual ward in the step-down version?
The staffing, how we organised ourselves was initially we had a discussion among our respiratory colleagues, especially our respiratory nursing team, who are very enthusiastic, and they liked the idea, and they felt that their expertise was well utilized in this kind of a way. Then we had discussion with our emergency department colleagues. Then we had a discussion with our acute medical colleagues. So everyone very much liked this idea and then came together to set this service up. So I have to thank all of my colleagues for this, for them to take this up so enthusiastically, especially when they were really under significant stress levels. And it was a new idea, and possibly we didn't know exactly how it will work at the start. So most grateful for the respiratory nursing team who participated and enthusiastically looked after these patients at home. So we already had a bit of an experience of looking after our asthma patients and COPD patients in the pandemic, where they visited their home and looked after them. So they felt that it is within their expertise to look after respiratory patients. So we set up two respiratory nurses to go around the world every day, 7-day service, to see which patients might be suitable for this service. We also had a referral service through our emergency department. If patients present out of hours or during the day, they would, if they fit the criteria to be discharged home, to be monitored at home, they will contact the respiratory nurses, and the respiratory nurses will go down to the emergency department or acute medicine department, counsel the patients, give them the oximeters, make sure that they can use the oximeters, make sure they understand the concept why we are doing it, and make sure that they are able to communicate when they are contacted on a daily basis, how they are and how they feel, and so forth. So, and then if once we feel that they are able to be safely discharged under the service, they would be discharged with an oximeter. And the respiratory nurses gave a telephone call on every day to every patient to monitor them and make sure that they are safer. So we did have a safety netting as well. So if they are deteriorating out of hours or during the hours, they can phone up the respiratory nurses, and out of hours, we made sure that ED and acute medicine knew that they can come directly to a COVID ward rather than turning up onto the emergency department. So we had discussed the pathways of how to prepare for any readmissions if in the case of deterioration. It worked quite well, and we were able to look after a large cohort of patients at home rather than in hospital.
So can I just check that even though the patient was at home and being supported by the nurses, did the clinical responsibility remain with the hospital consultants?
Yes. The respiratory consultants on call would be on call for any kind of issues which happened at any time. So my colleagues also participated in it. So we were on a rotational basis, although we were working in a much different way during looking after COVID wards. They were very helpful in participating and looking after these patients at home as well.
Okay, thanks. And so I think I'll ask a similar question through to Janet and Simon about who held responsibility for the patients who were using the oximetry at home and the app-based service. And perhaps you could say something a little bit about the app that was used as well.
Just following on from what Safi was saying with regard to safety netting, one of the things that when we were setting the service up, we were conscious of the potential numbers that might require monitoring at home. We were aware of the pressures on the workforce, you know, with numerous calls of services that they needed to provide, as well as, you know, the pressures of COVID and staff being off because of that as well. So what we did decide to do in Tees Valley was actually we decided to use a digital app, so that we could actually monitor more patients by the use of an app that incorporates automatic safety nets that helps to make sure that the patient is aware that when they have submitted their reading, if it was a reading that was submitted out of the range of the parameters, they instantly received a message telling them what to do in addition to the written material that they'd received. Now, this enabled us to make sure that we could focus on those patients that needed that greater one-to-one involvement from the nursing team to make sure that our attentions could be focused in the direction where their specialist expertise was most required. So we did decide to use an app for those patients that weren't able to access digital technology themselves or weren't familiar or comfortable doing it. Then we had a range of solutions to be supported either by, you know, other family members, or indeed for those that needed our nursing staff to actually enter the information onto the app on their behalf, we could do that. Feeling that that would get over the fact that this wasn't a 24/7 service. It wasn't, Tony. It was 7 days a week, but it wasn't 24 hours a day. So the use of the app gave the patient the ability to know that the machine themselves that would flag back to them instructions as to what to do if there was an issue with the readings, or give them the reassurance if everything was on target, and allow those nursing staff just to concentrate on the patients that needed the greatest attention and involvement in the 14-day period of monitoring that we'd put in place. From a clinical responsibility point of view, when we launched this with our GP practices, it was clear these patients were the responsibility of their GP practice still. Their COVID management was linked in with the COVID oximetry at home service, but their day-to-day, anything else that might have happened to them, was still and remained the responsibility of their general practice.
Two things to say about both versions of the warden. There were two versions, essentially, that they had a shared governance. The federations and the acute hospitals, together with the CCG and our ambulance service colleagues, meeting on a weekly basis to establish what was working well and to work out what to do with the things that worked less well, and to see that we were reaching as many people as we could. So we did have governance arrangements within the step-up ward, which was the one that the federations were most involved with. We were looking at people who were in the community to begin with, who might need to be advanced to hospital care. We had the facility to assess them either by their own GP or in our hot COVID services as to whether they needed further admission, or if they were deemed to be in a red zone, that their oximetry really dropped, we had direct admission rights to a COVID ward where they could be not only assessed but managed as well. We were able to look at the step-down version that Sathi's been describing and support that model and work out how that could be shared across the Tees Valley with other hospital colleagues.
Okay, thanks. So do we feel that it's worked? Perhaps we could say something about linking to the national evaluation, which I know we're part of, but what's the feedback been like, and do you feel it's worked?
Listening to patients, as you do as GPs, patients who've been through the process, they are the ones that got well all on their own, were immensely grateful for the support that they received from the nurses. The ones who ended up being sent into hospital were immensely grateful because they had not been perceiving themselves as sick, and they were very clear that it was the oximeter that told them they were in trouble, and it was the nurse and the system that pushed them to seek help at the right time. But thankfully, the vast majority of people who did escalate didn't become significantly unwell and were able to be discharged after short periods of treatment, which was the initial goal of the ward. We did have a couple who unfortunately succumbed to their disease, but we're confident that given the number of people who did need escalation to hospital care, we did very well, and that the cohort we were looking after did very well. And we think that's because they got access to early treatment. And we, like everyone else, is waiting for the national evidence as to how that worked, and we think we produced a model that could access large parts of our community.
same sort of question to Sathi. Do you feel that it helped both in terms of the safety of the patients and perhaps hospital capacity?
Absolutely. I mean, the service has been really appreciated by many number of patients. We had written feedback, and most of the times the nursing staff report that the patients, although their oxygen saturation were okay, they had other kind of a condition symptoms which they were struggling with, because this was a relatively unknown disease and people had so many kind of a fear of this disease, which were kind of tackled in a very professional way by our nursing team. And I think it's very easy to discard that, but that is, I think, that's a very important aspect of patient care. And I think it had a massive impact on their recovery and also recovery post-COVID illness as well.
With a bit of luck, COVID isn't going to be as bad going forward as it's been. Perhaps we could think about whether we can use this sort of approach in other conditions or in other ways. Simon, perhaps we'll come to you.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Tony. What we've done is effectively link patients with small portable tech, given them a system in which to use that tech, and doctors and secondary care colleagues who can support them. I think that model has to expand to other conditions, and some of that will be managing the severe end of chronic disease that our hospital colleagues want to manage in the community or to monitor better in the community, which is fine. But I also think that there's a huge value to support those patients with moderate to severe chronic disease in primary care, and that we will have to collaborate to achieve that and to be effective. And I think the lessons of collaboration, of shared governance, and using as much modern technology, text messaging, apps, video calls, it's all been in this model. And it's got to be a way forward as we try to recover from COVID. And manage the backlog of chronic disease, which, if we're not careful, will become chronic ill health.
It was a good opportunity for patients to be empowered by what they could actually do for themselves with just that little bit of kit, as Simon said, that they knew they could have the confidence. Whilst they didn't have to report the readings more than several times a day, they could take it themselves in between times, should they want to, for that reassurance. And it's part of something that they could actively do for themselves. And I think it's how we pick up that element of patient empowerment along the expert-patient approach as to how it can add into them having the security to know that they can do more themselves for their condition, knowing that they are supported by a team around them in their mission of doing that. So I think that's a real positive that we need to retain from this and use it in other disease areas, absolutely.
Sathi, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the learning from this virtual monitoring, patient empowerment, kind of caring for themselves has to be taken forward into other areas like looking after frail patients in rest homes, nursing homes, secondary care, monitoring them from hospitals for, as Simon said, for moderate to severe disease, admission prevention. There are a number of things that this could be utilized for. Certainly, one of my roles currently that I've taken up is certainly will be looking at that. So I'm hoping my other colleagues will be taking up enthusiastically the same kind of an enthusiasm that we set this up in other areas. And hopefully that will be better for our patients and as for our colleagues as well.
So I think we should probably come towards an end now. And so I'm going to ask people that question that's always a bit difficult to answer. But if you knew then what you knew now, what would you have done differently as you were setting up these services? I think people will find that helpful as a way of thinking about how they might set up services in their areas if they haven't got them. So who wants to go first with that one?
I'd say very clearly that the most useful thing to me that we did early, and I would always want to do again early with any new project, is to establish the governance. It sounds really boring, but it was the bit that stopped us falling out. As a newly put together team, we knew that there was a place where any little niggles or frustrations could be aired in a safe space, and that we could bring any problems and document them and document their solution. It worked really neatly, and it meant that whenever we ran into a problem, we knew how we were going to solve it.
I think as a supplementary, it would be following on from what Simon said. We learned from never waste a crisis. And yes, I think we'd all like to not be in the situation of having a new disease in the same way again. But hey, that's, you know, that's for others to determine other than us. But it is crucial that you get the relationships right. And it's how we can retain those relationships that we've forged very, very quickly, because it coincided with the setup of new organisations anyway. And it's how we would continue to use those relationships that we have gained and that have grown over this time period to expand into other areas, which I think we'll be well set up to do, which doesn't really answer your question, Tony. We do many things the same, but I have to say, just goes to show the power of relationships in a crisis situation. That really is what COVID, I think, has been all about, really, hasn't it?
Sathya, is there anything you would do differently if you could have your time again?
As Simon and Janet said, I think we have done actually quite well with the time frame that we had. We looked after both these setup in a fast pace. Then we looked after the patient safety of side things by putting up a governance meeting. Perhaps my only thing is our wards started in June. Perhaps my thought process is, why didn't I think of this earlier? It's the only question going through my mind. So if I had thought of earlier, we could have been helped the patients from March itself. So that's the only kind of regret. So we have learned. So probably we might need to constantly think of innovating. We need to get into that mindset of what we can do differently. I'm sure there is, because we came up with this idea and implementation in a very short span of time. I'm sure we can do the same thing for many other conditions, really.
That's great. So I just want to bring it to a close and just from my own point of view say thank you very much to everybody who's been involved in this work. It's been the most extraordinary year, and this has been one of the more extraordinary but positive bits of that year from my point of view and from the AHSN's point of view, and it's been a privilege to work with everybody who's been involved. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by the Academic Health Science Network for the North East and North Cumbria. If you'd like to find out more about us, you can visit our website at www.ahsn-nenc.org.uk. And if you're seeking advice and support for an innovation in healthcare, please do get in touch.